to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 312, where we are joined by Mally Bonner. As I'm reading the bio that you sent me, I'm like, I don't know all this. I thought this was just a cool guy I met at the back of a movie theater a couple of months ago. But as it turns out, you are a recording artist yourself, which I knew, part of the Bonner family, obviously as indicated by the last name, which we'll get into what that means exactly coming up. But also you've worked with some pretty big recording artists as well. And I have to embarrass you a little bit. You and I have been chatting on Marco Polo, and I was watching one of your videos back yesterday to make sure that I had got all the information I need. And my girlfriend went, well, he is a good-looking gentleman. And I was like, hey, now watch it.
Right, back off my polo. Yeah,
this is my polo. This is not yours. Yeah. So thank you for being here.
For sure.
Coming up later, we're going to talk about an amazing project that Mally is working on and that he needs help. He needs the support of the people here in the hall. So make sure you stick around for that. But first of all, I guess let's start where, what does it mean that you're part of the Bonner family?
Oh, my gosh. You know, so there's 8 kids, and it's brutal in that household because everybody sings. And so, you know, we get together, and it's a singing competition every week, and there's categories. Like, American Idol is nothing compared to what happens in our house. Yeah.
Like, you don't get fed if you don't sing well. It's
sing.
Like, sorry, go over there. You're in the last round.
Absolutely.
You might have seen the Bonner family probably most recently and most notably as part of the B1 celebration that was, what, last June, correct?
Yeah that's right.
Talk about that experience for a minute.
Oh, my gosh. It was incredible. It just evolved so quickly. You know, weeks before it, you know, we were told we'll sing maybe a little something, like maybe.
Yeah.
And then as it got closer and they learned more about the family, and our, you know, our family is unique within the church. Uh-huh. You know, it's rare you see a big black family that's like, oh, my gosh, we're always the only ones.
Yeah.
You know, and so as they learned more about our family and our background in music, they're like, well, let's have you do a couple numbers. And so, you know, I arranged this medley of primary songs and we called all the family out. And, you know, those who have seen it, we just kept pouring in, you know.
Yeah.
And so we're all there. And it was a beautiful, beautiful event. And just to be a part of it was just phenomenal for us.
For people who you know, they go B1, they may not even remember or recognize what it is. It's the commemoration, the 40th commemoration of the restoration of priesthood blessings for all members of the church.
Exactly.
Talk about that experience. I mean, that obviously has some weight for you as a black gentleman.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, well, for me, you know, every year it's a great experience for me personally.
Yeah.
But to have the church put something on like that was so special for us, you know, so that it wasn't just in the home of those black families or in the home of other Africans or something like that. It was something the whole church got to celebrate. And I don't think this is something that just black people were so happy about. This is something that all people were just like, yes, let's celebrate this. So it was great.
I can speak, you know, as a very white, I'm the whitest of white people. I loved it. I thought it was, I loved it for a lot of reasons. One, you know, there was some discussion certainly online by haters, of course, that are like, why are we celebrating racism? And it's like, I think you're missing the point. But also for me, I loved that it was a couple of things. One, that it sort of takes us out of this very Salt Lake-centric or Utah-centric church, first of all. But two, like, that I really loved the music and that I felt something different than I had ever felt in a musical experience within the church.
Absolutely. It was different. You know, it was definitely like, whoa, is this music okay here? Yeah. We can do this? We can, okay, we're going to clap.
Yeah.
You know.
can we clap hands?
Yeah.
Will that be all right?
Yeah. So that was a special, and well, to go with what you said, like the haters and whatnot, there's always going to be people saying something about something, but you know, you're dang if you do, dang if you don't. But with this type of issue, I'd rather be dang if you do.
Yeah.
Do something.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and the church did something, knowing that some people might feel some kind of way about it, but it was a special event, and I'll always remember it.
People can see the whole event. It's still on YouTube, and I know it's online. If you search B1, you can find it. In fact, I'll even toss a link with it at theculturalhall.com in association with this episode. So You arranged that whole thing that you guys sang?
Yes.
Talk about that. That's got to be...
Well, you know, I mean, honestly, it was a lot of prayer because this was a big deal. This was a big deal to be a part of this.
Right.
And we were torn, you know, we always say, we need some Indians in our family because there's too many chiefs, you know? And so it's like, everybody has an opinion on what's, you know?
Sure.
And so we finally came to the conclusion that we want to do the music that we came up on in the church. Like, we could have done anything. We didn't have to do primary songs. We could have done original music. But this music is what kept us close as a family. This is what kept us strong in the gospel. And we wanted to share that our way with the saints and those who aren't members. And I think that was the right decision because the Spirit was so thick in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You talked about, you know, being part of the Bonner family, not only that there are a lot of chiefs, but that every night is like American Idol. Yeah. Talk about where you guys were raised and how you guys found the church.
Yeah. So we were raised in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Or at least the majority of us were, because, you know, 8 kids and my parents moved around a bunch. But how they got there was, prior to Vegas, they were serving a Baptist mission in Africa.
Okay.
And
there is a story here I can tell.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So I'll try to windle it down.
They
were serving a Baptist mission in Africa, and they loved it. It was phenomenal. They loved the people, loved the mission. And, you know, they get on their knees and they say a prayer every night. And they said their prayer. And my mom turned to my dad and said, did you get what I just got? And he looked at her like, yeah. She's like, well, we got to go. We're not serving the right mission right now.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, not that this is the wrong place, this is the wrong, but they felt like this is not where we're supposed to be. And so, you know, they told their mission leaders, of course, they didn't like that. And so the people rallied together to get money together for them to leave, to help them. So they left. Spirit told them, go west. And they did.
Year are we talking? When is this?
We're talking late 70s.
Okay.
Yeah, late 1970s. So they get on a Greyhound and they go west. And they get off at Vegas like, okay, this is west enough.
Yeah.
And
okay, I'm looking at the map and apparently we are west.
Yeah.
So here must be it.
You have no idea. And so at the time, it was my mom, my dad, and my 2 older sisters. And my mom's pregnant with me. And so now they're here in Vegas and no plan, no direction. They just knew the Lord said, go west. So they're here now like, okay, Lord, what do we do?
Yeah.
And so now they're down to the last $50 and homeless.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So there's no home. They're in a park in downtown, the strip. And you know how that's crazy down there.
Yeah. You get stabbed if you go one block the wrong way.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and so my mom's looking at my dad like, let's go, Harry, figure it out, you know? And he's like, okay. And, you know, he goes over to the payphone and calling this job interview that he went out for. And it's tough. You don't have a home and there's, you know, you need references. It's just not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And then these 2 guys come by on a bicycle, you know, and start asking him questions. And he's like, hey, I don't know. I don't, you know, what do you need? What do you want? Yeah. You know, and they're like, no, what do you need? You know, we're just members of the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints. And he's like, all right. I don't know what that is. Yeah, I'll take this card. And, you know, they said, well, if you need anything, just call our bishop and, you know, he'll help you out. I said, okay. And so he went back to my mom. My mom says, well, what happened? You get the job? And he's like, no, but these guys came up on me and I don't know, they're interrogating me or something, but they gave me this card. She's like, well, what is it? Well, it said, call the guy. She's like, well, go call him. You know?
And so I love the simplicity of your mom.
Right.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Are we doing this?
Exactly.
We'll go.
Yeah. And so he goes over and calls the number and a guy gets on the phone and he says, hey, is this Harry? And he said, well, yeah. He's like, I've been waiting for your call. Just talk to the missionaries. Where you at? I'll come pick you up. And so the bishop comes over, picks up my parents, takes them to the house. They stay with that bishop for a few months.
Oh, my
gosh. Now, the bishop just says, here's the kitchen. Here's your room. Here's this. Here's that. Whatever you need. If you need to borrow the car, we have an extra car here. And, you know, make yourself at home.
Wow.
Never invited them to church. Stayed there for 3 months.
Wow.
So they're like, okay. My dad got a job now because he had a place to stay where he lived. And it's a good area. And it was all great. They're like, we got to at least stop by this man's church. He's a pastor or something.
Right.
You know? And so they did. They said, well, we want to go to your church. Well, sure. Yeah.
So well, I hadn't thought about that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they go to the church and my mom's in her full get up, dashiki, everything and their gear and no shoes.
Uh-huh.
And they walk in there and they look around and like, what is this place? And my mom and dad look at each other and they're like, did you feel that? And they're like, yeah, this is it. this is the place.
Yeah.
And they knew right then when they stepped in that that was where they were supposed to be.
Wow.
Back from that mission, that's where it got them.
Unreal.
So that's where it all began. Long story short, or long story longer, but that's it.
No, that's awesome. So then is it like the story that we always hear? It was a matter of a week, and then they were baptized into the church?
Well, they saw a few different groups of missionaries. I mean, my mom's pretty tough, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, beat a few of them up. And
sure.
Then, you know.
Yeah, but what about, hey, and what about this thing?
Exactly. You know, so they went through it, but it was pretty quick.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
And then just decided to stay in Vegas because that was where they...
Exactly.
They had gone?
Yeah, exactly. They, you know, they kind of got familiar with the community there and the church community, and it was just great to have a community really help raise their children. My mom really, she gives credit to the leadership in the church, you know, mm-hmm. the bishops and the young men's group leaders that helped us men stay grounded.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And music was a big part of her life.
Exactly.
So talk about that for her, because she obviously brought you all up in that. But mm-hmm. How did she feel it or know it that was her?
Well, I mean, my mother grew up in Flint, Michigan, and it was a rough neighborhood out there, but her release was she was singing in a Baptist choir, and mm-hmm. she was always the soloist, and mm-hmm. Someone took her under their wing and helped her get into college, and she was doing great in college, got a master's degree in vocal performance and whatnot, and so when she had children, she's like, okay,
yeah.
I know this, and I can teach them I can teach them this skill, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
It was happening.
You may have questions in your life, but one question you will not have is whether or not I'll be doing music, because I already know the answer.
Absolutely. I mean, you know what's funny is by the time I graduated growing up singing, because we all were in a choir together, we would go to church, mm-hmm. and then we'd also go to Baptist church.
Oh, really?
Because my mom's like, you know, she's got to go get her culture.
Yeah.
And she wanted us to have that too.
Sure.
So we'd go and sing there and then go to church. We'd doing both. And she'd start a gospel choir and have people from her ward join the choir like she does now.
Yeah.
All coming up. And so, but by the time I graduated high school, I was like, there's no way I'm going to be teaching voice anymore. I'm done with this stuff. And then, you know, that's my career. I provide for my family because of that. So,
how important was it for you to learn and to know that culture?
It wasn't important then until I became an adult, mm-hmm. and I realized, wow, what if I didn't have those experiences of learning really where the music came from for my people,
mm-hmm.
for Black people, you know? And so it's important just because the culture of the church doesn't necessarily match Black culture,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so to be able to find something where you can identify with in the Black communities and Black churches, but also have the depth of the gospel and the fullness. It was a win-win for me.
Was it ever confusing? I know as a kid, it'd be like, hey, wait a minute, these guys said...
It wasn't.
No.
It really wasn't. It never was. It was very, it felt very normal. You know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's a thing that as we see the release of the new hymnal this summer, allegedly, right?
Mm-hmm.
They say July 2019. I'll obviously ask if you had any involvement with any of those things, but that's coming.
Yeah,
hang
sure,
on to that.
Sure, sure.
Figure out a way to creative tell me no, but even though I know the answer is yes, that's fine. You know, I think that that's something that we'll see less sort of dirgical, you know, these dirgy church songs. I think that you'll see far more cultures represented within the hymnal, or is my hope, I guess. Maybe I'm just projecting these things. Did you have any involvement or have you had any involvement with the new hymnal?
So as of right now, no, just because it's been such a busy year, but I do keep getting calls about it. So I think I'm going to have to do something. Whether or not it'll be a part of that hymn, I don't know, but I'll end up doing some music for sure.
Don't make your mom call you and tell you what to do.
That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Molly, listen, what are we doing here? Molly.
Yeah.
You know, let's answer the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they are calling.
Yeah.
When God is calling, what do we do? And you're like, I get it, Mom. I get it.
Yes.
I really am looking forward to that. And I think that that's one of the things that was so powerful, kind of as we retreat back to talking about the B1 celebration, mm-hmm. is that it was like, man, for a lot of people, it was their first experience, sadly, worshiping the Lord in that kind of music. And they were like, yes, more of this, please.
Yeah.
Can I get some more of this? Let's take a break real quick. And then when we come back, I want to talk about your career now. You mentioned that you're able to to coach and to train people now, and that's how you make your living. Also about the movie Jane and Emma. I want to talk about some of that. And then still to come, of course, Mally needs your help, and you can help him. So we'll get into that. That's coming up in the next block of the Cultural Hall.
Hey, this is Jake the Computer Boy. Whoops, I meant Computer Guy from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. You haven't heard me on the radio doing commercials in a long time because I've been learning all the ins and outs of PC Laptops, the company my dad, Dan the Laptop Man, started 21 years ago. I've been working at our corporate headquarters designing and building new computers for you. I design and hand build the new PC Laptops S1 desktop, and it's just $799 with a lifetime warranty. Each one is built to perfection, blazing fast and beautiful, and backed forever with a rock-solid lifetime warranty. And it's only $7.99.
Thanks, Jake. I love you, son. Dan the Laptop Man here. To make it impossible to resist, we're doing 12-month special financing on any PC Laptops desktop or laptop computer. Have I lost my mind? Call us at 1-877-596-7283 for details or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com, where we love you!
Time now for the second block of the Cultural Hall. If you are a Patreon subscriber of the Cultural Hall, thank you so much. It allows us to do amazing things like this interview and other things. You know, we've got the new studio that's being built that will allow us to more easily record those weekly episodes and get them to you. If you're interested in doing that, you can go to patreon.com/thecultural hall. Now, Mally, I've got to ask you about Jane and Emma. That was, for me, I mean, there was a lot of amazing things in that movie, but the music was by far, and I just watched the trailer again before you got here this morning. I was like, oh, yeah, this is so great. Talk about your experience with that movie.
Oh, man. It was such a spiritual experience for me to be a part of that. Initially, that was not the plan for me to do all the music.
Really?
Yeah, it was just... You know, Deseret was going to do talking about doing an EP with the Bonner family, and we can do some songs in the movies. Like, great. And so I met with Chantel and Arthur, and they didn't know, but I had spent the last month putting together a bunch of the score already, just because I was so inspired by the story.
Yeah.
That whether I was going to be the composer along with Jonathan Keith, my partner, or not, I was going to make the music.
Yeah.
So we made the music and we presented it to them. Not just songs with my family, but also music for the movie. And they were like, okay, let's circle back around on that. And we ended up getting the job there.
That's awesome. For people that may not know, the movie Jane and Emma is the story of both Emma Smith, right after Joseph Smith was martyred, killed, and Jane Manning James, who is the servant and also friend of... the Smith family. How vital and how inspirational was that story for you?
It was very inspirational just because I got to see someone who looked like me that believed the things I did.
Yeah.
And that was different. You know, that was different for me. I had maybe heard of Jane Manning, just about everybody else. You know, I think I've heard of her, or that's about it.
Right.
And so, but to actually read the script and get to know someone that shares my history and also was able to be converted into something that I believe in was so special for me specifically. Yeah.
Explain it to someone like me because, you know, I unfortunately or fortunately, I guess, you know, I have this blessing or curse, depending on how you look at it, of being the white guy raised in Utah. So like everybody looks like me. And I feel like I'm a really open person who really loves people and wants to share the message and be there for them. You know, I aspire to be that bishop who could take in a home, take a family into my home and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But there is a certain element that I want to understand, but I don't know that I can understand. Why is that so important to be like, that person looks like me and I feel the same way? Talk about that.
You know, it's hard to really verbalize what that feels like, but there's something that connects with a person when you can see yourself physically in them. You know, it's one thing to look at someone and know that the things that they say and believe are similar. Mm-hmm. But if you can't see that their culture is the same, their history is the same, There's so many things that separate us. And so to not have all these other barriers that separate me from other saints that I look up to, that was what was so special about it. And that doesn't take away from any of the saints that are not looking like me, like Emma, like that women.
Right.
In me being a man, but looking at these two and seeing these two women is like, these are heroes.
Yeah.
You know, and to connect like that. I mean, I think that each one of us has a different way of finding how we connect to each other. But for me, to look at someone, to hear someone, and to feel someone, those three go together for me. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
You are able to coach, even though you swore that you would never do it again when you graduated, to be able to coach some pretty amazing people. Talk about what you do aside from church stuff now.
Yeah. Like I said, graduated, and I was like, yeah, thanks, Mom. Not using that stuff, you know.
Later.
Yeah, exactly, right?
You'll be back, she says. You will be back.
Yeah. And so I'm out in LA, and I, you know, I'm in this boy band. I'm like, oh yeah,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me the name of the boy band.
No.
It can't be worse than Alex Boye and Awesome, his boy band. That his boy band was named Awesome. And if you can see the pictures of Alex Boye in this boy band, it's like, okay, I would find a way to get those from the internet. What was it?
Oh gosh, why? Soldier, but not soldier, but soldier. SOUL-JAH.
No, sure.
Oh my gosh. So anyway,
a couple guys. How'd you know those guys?
Yeah. Well, a manager kind of got us all together, and you know, one of the guys was a member, and the other ones weren't. But you know, by the end of it, we all were. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, just for to spend time on the boy band, we ended up doing music with Gladys. Uh-huh. She found out about us, and I ended up writing on her gospel album.
Gladys Knight, of course.
Gladys Knight. Yeah, Gladys Knight. And so she managed us for a little bit and wrote on her album, and that was awesome. And then, you know, me thinking, yeah, boy band, we're going to make it famous. But then when I was in other sessions, recording sessions, there were other artists, and I just knew how to make them better just from what I learned growing up.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, you're doing this and this. If you just do this, this, and that, this will happen.
What do you know, soldier boy?
Right, exactly. Exactly. So managers, production companies, labels started seeing how I was impacting their artists. Mm-hmm. And so it went from, like, you know, reality shows to artists, pop artists, you know.
Wait, so you worked on, like, what reality shows?
Well, I mean, a lot of them flopped. One was MTV's Top Pop Group. Another show was Dance Wars. And then, of course, like, American Idol would send me their people. The Voice would have me send them people, you know. And,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Yeah. You know, and then it kind of just moved on to, like, you know, the quote-unquote divas that are doing it right now, you know.
I can't get past the point that the band was called Soldier.
Oh man, just get past it.
Do you have t-shirts and stickers still that
no,
you're like,
no, I
just
do not.
Hide those away. I took those. I'm going to take those to Deseret Industries as soon as I can.
Oh man. No, I gave it all to one member. He holds everything.
Really?
He held the keys to Soldier. Yeah.
Ooh, was there anything any good that came from you guys?
No, it was great.
Oh, I said no.
No,
it was terrible.
No, I'm saying no, it was great just because of really the friendships and the gospel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like me, I was loose with it. I was like, yeah, I'll go to church. I don't know, all next week. But then I have these other guys who now know that I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I got to go all the time now.
Right.
Oh, I got. And so they really, not being members and being so close with them, made me dive in and make sure I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing. Then we ended up all being members, you know.
It's interesting how that works, right? Like when someone knows, like, sometimes when you would kind of let yourself lax a little bit, the people that are like, no, members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints do not do that. So I don't know what you're doing right now, but I know you're not supposed to. It's like, okay, I guess I won't do that. So you alluded to the fact that you're able to take care of your family. So you're married?
Yes, married. Okay. Yes.
Kids?
Yes, I'm married. My wife, Chantel, and I have two beautiful children, Gio and Ari.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean,
how did that happen? Where did you get them?
Well, I met my wife on a way to, like, a recording session. She was the hostess at Chili's, and she was like, "Welcome to Chili's," and I was like, "Oh yeah," you know.
I don't know if you know this or not, but I was part of a boy band, Soldier. Exactly. You ever heard of us?
You're joking, but that's really how it happened. That's basically it, and we sang for free food. And
really?
Yeah, really.
Oh,
yeah. So really? It served its purpose. Yeah, right.
You're like, if this serves no other purpose. Yeah, I got that right there. And that was it.
that was really it. Like, well, she met me when I was just doing the group. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, cool, yeah, so what's your backup plan? I'm like, backup plan?
Yeah.
I'm going to be famous. What are you talking about? Like, get on the train.
Yeah.
You know?
Get on the soldier train.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, you know, she really helped me, like, point me in the direction of, here's where you can really make money. And, you know, and now working with, you know, like the Katy Perry's, Ariana Grande, like, I never thought I'd be doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that you just sort of throw those in and people are like, wait, 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 hold on. Ariana Grande and Katy Perry? Oh, so that's who he's working with. All right. Was she a member of the church or did she convert?
No, she's not a member of the church.
Oh,
still not. No.
Still not a member
still
of the
not
church.
A member of the church.
How do you navigate that? My girlfriend's not a member of the church as well.
You know, honestly, it's supporting what she believes and her supporting what I believe. Like respecting both because she has a strong relationship with Christ and I love what's made her, and she feels the same way about me.
Yeah.
You know, so we go to both.
Really?
Yeah. So she comes to my church, I go to her church, our kids go to both, same thing. You know, it's singing and dancing at hers, sitting quiet at ours, you know, and it's, you know, the same thing. But we support each other because we love what's made us who we are.
Describe that experience for you then, because so for me with my girlfriend not being a member of the church, she's made me far more intentional in the way that I worship. When she'll be like, you know, why do you do that? I'll be like, you know what? Hold on.
Yeah.
I know that there's an answer, but I don't really know. Describe how that has strengthened both your relationship with her and with Christ.
Yeah, it's been awesome. It kind of keeps you honest. And, you know, what's great about the church is the structure. And at the same time, you can get lost in it.
Right.
You know? And so she's helped me be intentional, you know, in the things that I do. Like, why? And then why? So then why?
Yeah.
You know? And so to ask myself those questions and really know why I'm saying these prayers, know why I'm doing this service. It's a calling for what? So a job? So for what? For who? Why? You know? All those things.
Yeah. That's awesome. And then your kids, how old are your kids?
5 and 2.
How's that being a dad?
Oh, man. It's awesome. I thought I was going to have a lot of kids, but 2 feels like 6. So I'm done. I'm done. You know? I am done. Yeah.
You really thought big another, like the Bonner second generation,
totally.
Like the Osmonds?
I'm like, yeah. I was going to do the same thing my mom did. Like, oh, yeah, I'm getting a whole crew, and we're going to teach you guys. Like, no. It's just the 2. And when I come, every time I come to Utah, I'm like, I don't know how they do it. Like my little brother with his like 4 or 5 kids under 6. And I'm like, I don't get it.
How
is it possible? I don't know. It blows my mind.
Have you done the sit down with the kids and be like, we are going to be a musical family, though, even though there's just 2 of you?
No. I mean, really, you know, I guess until you have the children, then you realize, oh, they are who they are.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
Like one does not do music.
Really?
It's just not your thing. Got it. You know, and the other one is like all about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is it harder to relate to the one that doesn't do music? It's like, this is my passion, this thing I love. And you still love them, right? I'm not trying to say that you love one kid more than the other. But like, I know parents who are like, I have a lot in common with this. So it's not that this kid is my favorite, but like the access points with the ones that don't have similar interests, is it harder?
It's not just because I see myself in the one that doesn't. Because I'm like, oh, I'm not doing that. When I was growing up, I was like, yeah, I'm not singing. Yeah, I'll sing for you right now. Sure.
Yeah.
You know? So, no, it's just awesome to see them both evolve and grow in their own way, you know.
Harder or easier than you thought?
Definitely harder.
Yeah.
Nobody tells you about the lack of sleep. Like, why don't they say that? Like, that's messed up. I've talked to so many married people with kids. And I'm like, you never told me about the sleep?
Yeah.
How? I don't understand. So the first thing I tell anybody is like, okay, just prepare to not sleep.
Yeah. Ever.
Ever. Like, really. So, yeah.
What else? What else is different than you thought?
What's different is realizing how hard it must be for single parents. That's what's different is the teamwork that it takes to raise. I can't imagine doing it alone. And so, like, my 2 older sisters, they divorced earlier on in their marriage, and they had to raise their kids. They're remarried now, but for a period of time, it was just them.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine that type of responsibility. And so what's different is sharing the partnership between you and your spouse and how to raise these kids and time management. It's just like incredible.
I think you put voice to something that's super important that as members of the church that we're aware of, you know, the church often teaches like family, right? The mom and the dad and that's not everyone. That can't always be everyone's plan and, you know, life happens. But I think that's definitely a place where we can be aware, right? Where we can see that single mom or that single dad raising the kids, and especially that we can be like, hey, can we do anything?
Right.
Because I can't imagine trying to do this without this partner that I have. Is there anything that I can do? And so I appreciate both the respect and then also the awareness that you bring to a situation like that. I want to take a break, and then when we come back in the third block, we're going to talk about Green Flake. Do you know what this is? Do you know what we're talking about? We'll get into that and finally address that pressing question about how you can help Maui. That's coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall. I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something, and then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N at gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. If you have enjoyed this episode or other episodes, take a second and share this show available in podcast form with a good friend of yours, someone from your ward, or drop a review for us online. That helps us to be seen by other people and allows us the opportunity to do more and more of these type of interviews. Now, Mally, I have put it off till the end teasing people. What is Green Flake, or who is Green Flake?
Green Flake, he is a pioneer. So back in the 1840s, he was inherited by James Flake.
Wait a minute. Inherited?
Yeah. Yes. So James Flake's father passed away, and just like property back then, it gets kind of passed around to the children, and he is who Green Flake is who James Flake got in that inheritance.
It seems like a foreign concept,
totally.
But I just wanted to point that out. So a person was inherited as property.
Totally.
Like today, that just seems so icky and uncomfortable. But that is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's just the reality of America back then, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, they went and moved from North Carolina to Mississippi. Soon after, missionaries made their way out there, and the Flake family took to it right away and invited their slaves to be baptized.
Mm-hmm.
Green Flake was baptized. And over the next few years, he was then sent to Nauvoo to help the saints who were migrating in,
mm-hmm.
and to help serve Joseph Smith personally.
As a tithing, right?
Exactly.
Essentially?
Yeah.
So talk about how that works. I don't know how that, is it just like to tithing of today, like a part of your property?
Not really. It was more like, you know, because some could do labor,
uh-huh.
some could do, you know, food, some can do money. You know, there's different ways to pay tithing back then.
Uh-huh.
And so because that was property, that labor, it wasn't uncommon.
So he was sent to Nauvoo,
mm-hmm.
and then gets familiar with Joseph Smith. So talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah, well, so historians, you know, they argue whether or not he served as Joseph Smith's personal bodyguard or not. So that we don't know for sure.
Uh-huh.
But shortly after he was there, because the reason why they go back and forth about that is because of his size and nature. He was a large man. Like, there was few bigger than him, even though he was 16 at the time when he was sent. And he was sent with a couple mules alone and got there. And shortly after, Joseph dies. And then, you know, over the course of the next couple years, then Brigham Young became next in line.
So what are you, what's your association with Green Flake?
Well, I mean, if we kind of back up to where we started with the B1 celebration, that's where it began for me, because doing that celebration, that's what made me look more into Black history in the church. Because I again, was like most people where it's like, okay, I mean, I don't know much. You know, our younger generation doesn't really look back much into history.
Do you think that's because some of it's too hard for them?
I don't. I think the older generation is hard for them. The younger generation, it's not hard. They're just arrogant. Yeah. Like, they just don't look past and back. They're just worried about what they're doing in the future, you know? And so I think it's more that.
Okay.
And so I decided to do some reading. Like, I got to know more. I should know more. How come I don't know anything? How? Why am I learning all this stuff right now, you know? And so I just basically stopped everything I was doing and just dove in and was meeting with historians and getting reading like over 1,000 pages in a month. And that reading turned to writing very quickly. So in from July to August, I wrote the script. And that wasn't my intention initially. But just doing the history and reading and me being a songwriter, it just can, came naturally.
You say script for a movie. All about the life of Green Flake.
Yeah, so it's Green Flake, and of course we get to meet, you know, a lot of people along the way, because he was, you know, engulfed in it all during the pioneer migration and during establishing the early church, you know. So we meet a lot of not only free Black and enslaved, but also some of the white saints and leadership, you know, so they're all throughout the movie.
It seems like a pretty tough story to tell for a few reasons. One, it's so much in the past, and you're like, well, is this the truth or is what this guy's saying the truth? So there's some sort of you know, what judiciousness as to, well, I'm going to take this path and hope that it's right, but the story is kind of what you're looking for. But also, like, pretty tense.
Totally. You know, there are some tense moments, but more than anything, there are some heartfelt moments that change a person. You know, I just, like you said, because the path of this story is so sensitive and what direction do you take, my goal was to make sure that it was honest, it was heartfelt, and that there's hope. And, you know, that's the message that I want to portray here. So it's not just his sad story. This is a story of a Southern slave coming and becoming a Western hero. You know, for him to start as a slave serving the church and then to lead the first wagon and then to go on to speak at Pioneer Day alongside apostles. I mean, that's an incredible story, and it's filled with love and great pieces of history.
And I love that some people are listening to this right now going, okay, hold on, wait, what? Like, about all this, right? As you were less than a year ago going, oh, okay, hang on. So a guy was given his tithing to the church who then could have been the bodyguard, who then led the saints west in the first wagon train, who also was speaking with apostles. Okay, where is this in the book? Why do I not know this story? And you know what? He's not alone. There are other stories that we have yet to know.
Yeah, totally.
What do you feel a connection, a personal connection to Green Flake?
Absolutely.
Talk about it.
You know, initially, I was writing about Elijah Abel.
Really?
Yeah. That's where my focus was. And
now,
then,
tell people who Elijah Abel is, so if they don't know.
Yeah, Elijah Abel is one of the early pioneers as well. He was also a member of the Quorum of the 70 back when Joseph was living, you know, before things changed. And, you know, he also served on the militia that was the church's militia to try to get Joseph back after he was taken, you know. So Elijah is one of the first Black priesthood holders in the church.
And so originally the idea was to do a film about him, and then it sort of pivots to Green Flake.
Yeah, initially it wasn't to do a film at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Where you were just writing?
I just wanted to learn.
Oh, just learn.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even a writing thing at all. It was just like, I need to know these people.
Exactly. And so reading about Elijah, and I just kept getting drawn back to Green Flake. And there's less on Green Flake. There's so much on Elijah and so little on Green Flake, but I just was drawn to him because he seemed to be a nucleus of a lot of things. Like, I had to read a ton of journals, like during the Pioneer Trek, to find things. You know, when they'd say something, slave, okay, who said that, when, what the, to try to figure out where he was, at what point, what he did. And I felt a personal connection to Green because he kept his faith. And I can relate to that today. I know that, you know, we're not asked to lay down our lives. We're just asking to live the life that we should live. And for him, he did that. He lived. And through the incredible struggles he went through, and of course, slavery being the tip of the iceberg, I look at my life and see the challenges that I've had and see the friends around me, especially in Los Angeles, just leaving the church over things that have nothing to do with the church.
Right.
You know, and to see him stay. He has descendants that are having a reunion, and there's going to be over 100 of them because of him staying and doing the work. And it helps me keep my faith when my faith is shaken by things I don't agree with, things I don't like, someone I didn't agree with, someone I don't like, you know? So he really has become a pillar for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
To be able to draw strength on, you know, although maybe not a blood ancestor, but certainly ancestors for you. Have there been people, as you've been like, hey, so I'm writing a movie, that have been like, Molly, you don't know what you're doing, or you've never done a thing like this. Talk about some of the people who have gone against you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there have been a lot of people that, you know, I tell them, and I tell them after I got going, so I have the screenplay, I'm going to start shooting in December, and then we're going to finish something. Like, okay, listen, that's just not the way it works. It takes years and years, and I'm like, oh no, I don't have years.
Yeah,
no, now's the time, and really now is the time in the world for something like this, because I just think that there's two things happening in my opinion in the world.
Okay.
There's racial divide, and there's also people are trying to come together. Mm-hmm. And so it's like two at the same time are happening, right? Mm-hmm. And this movie that deals in a time of division shows how they came together. Because even though I'm talking about some sensitive issues in history, we get to learn the relationship that was bonded and formed between Brigham Young and Green Flake.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Brigham Young chose Green Flake to drive that first wagon. When Brigham Young got sick at winter quarters and sent them on, anybody could. Why Green Flake?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But right before Utah became a slave state in 1852, he helps orchestrate the freedom of Green Flake and his family. Why?
Yeah.
You know, so there's just relationships that because we haven't looked back, we don't really even talk a lot about Brigham Young because then we have to talk about the other stuff and the stuff he said. And I just feel like, especially for the younger generation, we're not afraid of the past.
Yeah.
You know, we want to know about it and do better.
Yeah.
Or do differently.
Yeah.
And celebrate the good and be like, ooh, not going to do that.
Yeah.
For the bad, you know, and that's okay. And I'm hoping that in this movie, we're going to be able to not only celebrate people that we have never heard of, like Green Flake, but also celebrate people that we don't fully get to appreciate, like Brigham Young.
I like the vision of the future that you just sort of portrayed there, right? That we can look back at our past and we can go, boy, not going to do that again, but that it is hopeful, that it is a future where we're brought together, where it's not, well, I can't and I'm out, and I, you know, that it really is a thing where it's just like, let's just pull together and come together and worship. The movie is made.
Well,
yes?
No. So the movie...
So I went on the Kickstarter, and you can go to theculturalhall.com, and you can see that. There are what seem to be clips. Are they just for a Kickstarter?
No. Thing? So we've shot over half the film.
Okay.
So you saw footage that is footage for the film.
Okay.
And so now we started a Kickstarter to finish making this movie.
Okay.
And so we shot everything that happened in the winter.
Okay.
And so now we're into the spring shoots, and that's what this Kickstarter is for.
So tell people why they need to do this.
So one, you should go to the Kickstarter at fundgreenflake.com. Just so you can see what we're doing.
Yeah.
and then decide if you want to be a part.
You will.
You know.
Spoiler alert. You will. Seriously, as I watched part of it, and that's why, you know, I was like, oh, man, this needs to be whatever they need this money for, and I assume the kind of the editing and that stuff.
Yeah.
This needs to be made, to be seen,
yeah,
to be shared,
totally,
to be viewed. It's pretty awesome.
Totally. Yeah, you're right. It needs to be seen. It needs to be, and it needs to be told by not just me, but by everyone, because this is not just my history. Just like Jane and Emma, just because I'm not a woman, that's not, it doesn't matter. That's my history.
Yeah.
What Emma went through, what Jane went through. And so I just hope that we can look at this film and say, this is all of our history, you know, in the church, at the church, white, black, because it happened and it brought us here. I told someone the other day that, you know, when I think of myself as American, right? And I love America. Like, what a fantastic country.
Yeah.
And I would never think of leaving this country. It doesn't matter how dark our history may have been at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I learned from the history. We're continuing to grow and evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this country. And I think that there's just that piece that might be missing for some people, is that we don't get to look at some of the past that is sad or dark. And then people leave.
Mm-hmm.
But for the younger generation, I believe, if they just get to know about it, see it, rather than Google it,
mm-hmm,
then they're not going to leave.
Right.
It's coming from us. This is our history. We've evolved. We're better here. You know, we're greater now. We were greater then in some ways. Like, mm-hmm, you know, just learning from it and talking about it. Then, I mean, so that's the comparison I make with America and talking, yeah, about history and the Oyster Church. Yeah.
Talk about some of the people that are involved in the project.
Oh, man. So that was the most special part for me, because after I finished the screenplay, I just started making some phone calls to friends or colleagues and, uh-huh, people who were active in the church, but also a part of the social network and influential people,
uh-huh,
you know, mainly singers and actors. And so calling Alex Boyer and David Osmond and a couple of the guys from Gentry, Casey and Brad and Malia Rose. I mean, literally the list goes on. And this was not like, I didn't need to say much more than 30 seconds. And they were like, I'm in.
Yeah, on board.
Tell me what to do. Tell me where to be. You know, Dallin Bayless, who's done so many church films, he moved so many things around to make it happen. And I just am so grateful for that. You know, my conversation with Alex Boye was hilarious, because he said,
tell me.
Well, I'm busy. You know, I'm really busy, man. I got a lot of things going in. So you got to tell me what you got going on and be quick about it. You know, because, you know, I'm like, all right, cool. Well, I did the script. Blah, blah. He's like, oh, I read it tonight and I'll give you a demo, but I can't make any promises. I'm like, okay, cool. Of course.
Yeah.
Just check it,
yeah,
out. He read it next morning. He's like, are you kidding me, man? This is incredible. We're doing this, man. This is the time. You know, he just, yeah. And so it was.
That's a pretty good Alex Boye. That is a pretty good Alex Boye impression.
Yeah. And yeah, so.
Yeah, it's fun to not only see familiar faces, but to have to me kind of an unfamiliar feeling, right? Like, I feel like it's growing, it's that expanding, it's that reaching to the past and reaching to the future together. I have to tell you though, the music is phenomenal.
Oh,
just in the, just in that little thing, like. I know that the movie is great and all that stuff, but stop in my tracks as I was watching just that short. It's like 2 minutes. Take 2 minutes today and check out the Kickstarter. That music is awesome.
Thank you so much.
That's you, I presume.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. But honestly, you know, because I'd rather make the music than be the artist. But for that one, it was just so dear to me that I did sing that one. Yeah.
So. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Thank you.
Was there any sort of, like from the family where they're like, okay, we didn't think you were really going to do this, but now we're on board, like people kind of coming in third quarter?
No, I mean, we grew up together, so they know, you know, when I start running, I'm a sprinter.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell people, like, listen, my long game's not so good, but if you want to sprint, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And so they knew right when I had my mind set on it, it was going to go fast. And that's kind of what's been happening. And like you said, music is the biggest element of this, because that's where my background is
yeah,
in music. And like I said, and keep talking about the millennials and the young people, I want this to not feel like, oh, that's an old person movie.
Right.
You know, the music is what's going to fuse it together. And since that's where I know is how to deal with young people, that's the connection that I'm making with the film.
How about with your spouse? Because I know that, like, I get involved in, like, these passion projects,
mm-hmm,
and then it's like, so this is going to make a lot of money. And it's like, well, I mean, okay, no, but I feel really passionate about it. How has she been about that?
You know, initially she was like, okay, so you're not going to work on that tour this summer? I'm like, no. She's like, okay. So I heard Ariana Grande is doing another thing. You're not going to... No. So literally, you know, because pop artists, they're going nonstop.
Yeah.
And when you say no, they find someone else.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, I'll get the next one.
Yeah.
They just find someone else. And that was a sacrifice I had to make. And so for my wife initially, she's like, okay, how long is this going to take? When are you going to be done?
Yeah.
And then she finally saw like there's a sneak peek of the behind the scenes.
Uh-huh.
And there's a scene where, you know, I just break down and am so emotional over... Really, I was overcome with love and gratification.
Is that gratitude?
Gratitude?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm with you either way.
Gratitude. I was just so happy to have everybody there and not just being in the film, but donating time.
Yeah.
We didn't have the money.
Yeah.
You know, and so to see it come together so quickly by so many. And when she saw that, she was like, oh, this is a passion thing. Oh, yeah. I was like, yeah. She's like, oh, so that you're not going to stop.
Yeah.
No. She's like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, so now she's all in and she just wants to support it. And she gets it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish that people could see you as you talk about your wife and you can just see the love and the support that she gives you in the way that you speak about her.
Totally.
It's pretty remarkable, not only what you're doing. I'm assuming you've never written a movie before.
No.
But just so impassioned and emboldened to tell this story. And for me, that's why when we met at the back of a movie theater several months ago.
It was like high school.
Yeah. A silly time to be sure. I'm eating my barbecue and I'm just, you know, we're joking around, but I could tell for me there was something very, very important going on. So I'm glad we had the opportunity to be able to connect. But to that point, I think that's why it's so important that as you're listening to this, even if it's like, I think you can, on Kickstarter, you can go as low as like a dollar, right?
Totally.
$1, $5.
Totally.
If you can do something like that, do it. If you need to still be sold on it, you're like, okay, maybe, go check out the Kickstarter, because I guarantee just with the first note of the song, you'll be like, okay, click. And if that doesn't sell you, being able to just see some of what they have already done.
Yeah, Invincible, because that's the song. So that's where all the artists came together, is Invincible.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
So good.
Thanks.
Aside from this whole thing, which you're like, aside from this, this is what my entire life is right now. Do you have other things coming up that people should know about?
No.
No.
There is nothing else.
All in.
No, really. This is it. It's this movie, Green Flake. Fundgreenflake.com. Don't be afraid of the word fund
Right.
Just that's the link. Fundgreenflake.com. And that's where you can see the song Invincible that shows you some of the movie. You can see the Kickstarter video that kind of gets the idea and the concept and the story. Check it out. And whether you're a part or not, I just grateful for anybody that goes and takes the time to see it.
A crucial, vital story for today and for future. And so I hope that people will go and check that out. Mally, thank you so much for being here. I know that super early, but I love that you came out and that we're doing this. I hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen to this episode this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to drive home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.